sound of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, a friendly 6 to 8 Thursday show talking about civil rights for poor people.
That's you and me. So, stay tuned to 96.3 FM or Catch My Breath.
I'm your host, Bathroom Spear Robert Norris. We should have a elder statesman, hopefully a soon-to-be retired elder statesman, Mike Rutkin, city council member, in the studio with us. He was on board last night for a debate on the sleeping ban, a law that should be eliminated, not even further discussed, so we can move on to the next subject. But let's see what we got from him today. Also have reports from Lou Rice, who is the man who did the fast in front of the post office. We hope to have a up-to-the-moment flash from the Homeless Services Center. We have reports of more troll busting and assaults on homeless people. We'll be talking about the war, the new initiative for advisory rent control by Bob LaMonica, Linda LaMaster, and David Silva, and Phil Baer on Dolphin Lee and strange doings in the beach flats. And more. So stay tuned. So much for the intro. Well, we're still waiting for our guest, but in the meantime, we're going to plow right ahead, and we have a couple of stories from the internet which have been kind of piling up. Here's one from Australia, from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, Wednesday, 12th of May. The Aboriginal Legal Service is outraged over a homeless man in Darwin being sentenced to 12 months in jail for stealing a $15 towel to keep warm. Kevin Anthony Cook, who had previous convictions for minor property offenses, pleaded guilty in the Darwin Magistrates Court to stealing the towel from a clothesline last month. Under the Northern Territory's mandatory sentencing laws, the third conviction on a property-related offense means an automatic 12-month jail term. Sounds like they're a little more liberal than we are. It means life in prison here. Three strikes and you are way out. John Shelton from the North Australian Aboriginal Legal Aid Service has called on the Chief Minister to change the law. I think all Australians should be ashamed that this result took place today, whether you're from the South, whether you're from the West, whether you're from the East, or whether you're from the North, she said. It's something that we all share some sense of responsibility for, because this law has been around for over 2 years now, and it should be a surprise to no one that unjust results like this will be taking place. Again, a man sentenced to a year for stealing a $15 towel to keep warm, which, interestingly enough, excites outrage and comment in Australia, whereas here, a theft, I guess a man who broke into a church, got a third strike and life in prison for that in Southern California. An amazing case. I think we talked about that in the past show, or at least I was intending to, and perhaps I can get that story to you in case I haven't already. Let's see what else we got here. Well, another story from Australia. Illegal church heroin room opens in Australia by Paul Tate, Sydney Reuters. An illegal heroin injecting room opened in a church in Sydney's King's Cross Red Light District as authorities Tuesday grappled with the invocation of church sanctuary to defy Australian drug law. The Tolerance Room, or Tea Room, based on Swiss and Dutch models, defiantly opened its doors in the Uniting Church Wayside Chapel, a rundown haven for Sydney's homeless and desperate. "If we are closed down, we will open again," Reverend Ray Richmond, the chapel's pastor, told reporters Tuesday. "If our frontline people are removed or intimidated, others will take their place." The Tea Room opened briefly late Monday, attracting a handful of heroin addicts and large media presence, which forced some addicts to inject in a grubby alley nearby. It marks the first time Australian drug addicts have been offered a safe environment to inject drugs using clean equipment and under medical supervision. It is also in direct defiance of Australian Prime Minister John Howard's zero-tolerance drug policy and puts church leaders and health workers who run the room at risk of arrest. Under New South Wales state law, aiding the self-administration of an illegal drug carries a penalty of 2 years jail, a $2,200, that's Australian dollar, U.S. dollars, $1,400 fine, or both. The Tea Room plans to open for about 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, for 6 weeks, at a cost of about $25,000 Australian. $15,000 U.S., said Tony Trimmingham, one of the founders. Addicts are given a pack containing a small syringe, a plastic spoon, and swabs, and must clean the Laminex tables before and after injecting the drugs they bring to the chapel. On the walls are no smoking signs and lists of rules for users. No dealing or exchanging, no sharing or assisting, no new users or users under 18, and inject in arms and legs only. Howard, whose government has almost doubled its spending on its rehabilitation-based fight against drug addiction to $510 million, that's $337 million U.S., condemned the Tea Room and said it was up to state officials to exercise the law. New South Wales Attorney General Jeff Shaw suggested he would not direct police to act against the chapel, at least until after a state drug summit set for May 17th. "Rather than have this matter decided in our criminal courts, let's talk it through and work out what an appropriate response is," Shaw said. Trimmingham said the Tea Room was open in the church so supporters could claim church sanctuary and supposedly avoid arrest or prosecution. He denied it condoned heroin use. "All we are doing is taking people out of the street where they injected publicly, where there's no hygiene, there's no supervision," said Trimmingham, whose son died of an overdose. Proposals for legal injection rooms have been voted down in at least three Australian states. Many unsupervised shooting galleries operate clandestinely, some in King's Cross strip clubs. Australia's death toll from heroin overdoses has soared from 70 in 1979 to 600 in 1997, according to the latest National Drug and Alcohol Research Center figures. That's Illegal Church Heroin Room Opens in Australia, a May 4th story by Paul Tate. We're still waiting for our guest, Michael Ratkin. In the meantime, here's a story from the Miami Herald. Six arrested in Weston for soliciting donations, by Alicia Naff, Herald staff writer, May 11th. "You've seen them on many a Broward street corner for the past 2 years. They approach your car in their orange hats, white t-shirts, and plastic buckets asking for donations, sometimes with the city's blessing and sometimes not. But for the first time, a half dozen solicitors with a group Helping People in America were arrested in Weston on Sunday. Six workers for the homeless advocacy group were ushered off Weston's main street and into Broward's Sheriff's Office patrol cars and cited for violating the city's law on soliciting donations from people in cars. To date, the volunteers have avoided arrest on solicitation charges by arguing they are selling a product, their Street Smarts newspaper, for a dollar. The six arrested Sunday were issued notices to appear before a Broward judge. If found guilty, they could be sentenced to up to 60 days in prison or fined up to $500. Our First Amendment rights were stamped on, says Sean Koninick, founder of the organization that operates a homeless shelter in Hollywood. We're going to sue Weston for it. Actually, we plan to show up in Weston and solicit again. If they do, BSO warns, they'll be arrested each and every time. The group's favorite Weston spot is at the entrance to the city at Arvida Parkway and Weston Road. Several Broward cities have codes that prohibit soliciting donations on the street without a permit. The group recently was asked to leave the roadways of Pembroke Pines, but last month the group appeared before officials who passed a law that allows charities to solicit 14 days each year with an approved permit. Pembroke Pines has said its law won't apply to the group because it is selling a newspaper. Still, Canoni said, that's selectively restricting nonprofits. You don't tell Shell you can only sell gas on Thursday. But arrest records from Sunday's Weston incident show the volunteers were approaching cars holding only their buckets. Apparently what they were out there doing was soliciting, not marketing a product, BSO spokesman Kirk Engelhardt said. Their buckets say donations on them, and the ordinance itself says Weston prohibits asking for donations on the road. A story from the Miami Herald. Of course, the question might arise, for those of us who are more skeptical of such things, that perhaps mention of the newspapers disappeared from the police report. Well, that, of course, doesn't happen. Police reports aren't falsified or changed. As we know from our own Santa Cruz experience, where street vendor and, well, you might say homeless activist, because he is homeless, lives in his vehicle, Steve Argue, who last night spoke at the same forum that I and Mike Rotkin spoke at on the sleeping van, was thrown to the ground, illegally arrested, hauled off, and held for 4 days on $5,000 bail because Officer Garner said he was selling a street newspaper without a license, which, of course, is completely illegal, as Chief Belcher has found in prior cases, and, of course, has always been the case. And when this issue was taken before the police review board in a complaint by another individual, Steve hasn't yet made his own formal complaint about the matter, but did file a claim on the issue about a week ago, the police review board apparently was told by the police department, as I was, by Chief Belcher in a letter, that no, it wasn't that he was selling a paper, it was that he was, surprise, obstructing the sidewalk. Now, if you're obstructing the sidewalk and you're told you're obstructing the sidewalk, then presumably that could be a crime. But according to all the witnesses I've interviewed, Steve Argue himself, and even Officer Garner, who I asked afterward within several hours what had happened on that street, on that Pacific Avenue location at Pacific and, I believe it was Church Street, it's right where the New Leaf Market is, SoCal, actually closer to SoCal. There was no mention of obstructing the sidewalk. This is a story, I'm afraid, let me put it this way, I fear this is a story concocted to avoid a lawsuit. And I certainly hope that a massive lawsuit ensues. I intend to file a complaint against Chief Belcher myself for either falsification or incompetence. I don't know what the appropriate answer is here, but I hope that our dauntless, undaunted, new and shiny Citizens Police Review Board will find out. Well, it looks like we're moving on in the hour. I suspect that our guest, Mike Rotkin, isn't coming, folks. He had told us he was coming yesterday. And it is, you know, he had said, however, he can only come for a very brief period of time, so he may be ditching us for some other commitment, even though he didn't make this commitment. And, of course, he's also told us that he will be returning next week for 2 hours. Let's hope he doesn't become a Kennedy-style no-show. That would be quite a blow to the reputation of Mike Rotkin. Actually, I spare no words in attacking Rotkin's vicious, intentionally false position, I really feel, on the sleeping van, because he knows better, he must know better. But in terms of his willingness to show up promptly for free radio interviews, he's got a much better record than Kennedy, or Sugar, who has refused to be on the air, for instance, at least on my show, and Crone, who has an abominable record for showing up late to appointments, although he has frequently called in, and we've invited Councilmember Crone call in today, should he choose to do so. Well, this is the Free Radio Station, as you probably know, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear, Robert Norris, in my bathroom, as the weather gets colder, I should say, as the day gets colder, the weather's mercifully warmer. We are going to have some interesting stuff coming up. We're going to have Phil Baer giving us some really articulate and needed information on what kind of stench is rising from the city council's latest plans around the beach flats. We're going to have an interview with Lou Rice. Lou is the man who, for 27 days, I believe, or was it 25 anyway, somewhere in there, sat in front of the post office, was on a hunger fast much of that time in front of the post office in search of a drinking fountain, decent, healthful, and adequate food at the Homeless Services Center. He was also looking for an expansion of shelter and respectful treatment of homeless people. And former Citizens Committee for the Homeless board member, video journalist, and activist Becky Johnson is, as we speak, out at the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors meeting, finding out if any of this stuff is actually happening, as well as dealing with a much more, well, it's equally immediate issue of troll busting, the beating of homeless people. We've received reports from Ken Cole, who's Homeless Services Center Director, that there are folks that will shortly be taken into custody on the basis of lineup identifications. Two men, at least, have filed reports with the police for being beaten. Joe Barker, who was assaulted in a building behind Saul's Leathers on May 8th or so. And Ted Romer, kicked in the ribs, gotten jaw broken, blackened eye, in an incident on May 13th. And there are at least five other attacks. That's not from Cole, that's from me. and I got independent confirmation of at least one of his attacks. I was going to have Joe Barker's companion, that is a man who happened to be in a group with him, Ron, who has filed a complaint with the police, speak on the air on Sunday. He didn't make it in. We did, in fact, do an interview with another homeless man who preferred to remain anonymous, a musician on the Mall, who talked about trollbusters beating and terrifying a man at a nearby camp, and he then hiding and essentially ambushing the trollbusters at his camp. That was quite a sobering interview, indicating that homeless people are not only fighting back, but they're in a position where they're just not going to believe that anything short of just cutting these people down is going to stop them unless the police take action. But according to Ken Cole, the good news is that the police are going to take action, at least on the assailants of these two men, and we're going to learn more about that hopefully in the program with a direct report from Becky Johnson.
There's a bloke in Transylvania who's said to have a mania. He's under the impression he's a bat, a vampire bat. But this fella they call Dracula's not nearly so spectacular at sucking blood and draining off the fat. As you know who, you surely do. She's working up an appetite for you. She'll make a stew, a barbecue. She'll eat your bones and all before she's through. She doesn't think that your old granny should be sitting on her fanny. Sheltered housing is a luxury she feels. We just can't afford it. It's a drain on our resources, and it doesn't help the forces. For it's missiles that we need, not meals on wheels. And you know what? It's got to stop. Old people should be taken out and shot. Shoot the lot. Stop the rot. Welfare is another bullshit plot. When she rises from her coffin, she's surrounded by her boffins, by her ministers they call the living dead. Good chaps, really. And they sing their merry ditty as they fly above the city. Yes, and Countess Thatcher out is at their head.
So watch your step.
They're very good.
And we're going to cut off that Peggy Seeger, You and McCall song, because I'm going to have to eat my words. Mike has made it into the studio, and he doesn't got much time. Hi, Mike. Let's check out your mic. Your volume.
How's the level there? Is that looking all right there?
A little louder.
A little louder, about like that?
That's good.
Okay.
That's good.
So you were saying new things about me, thinking I wasn't going to make it or something?
I did. However,
shocking.
I said a few rude things, but I did compare your record favorably with Scott Kennedy, who canceled 4 separate times, which you've generally been quite prompt, and you are here today, and I thank you. So you're off to an engagement after this very shortly, but in a week you'll be back for a longer and more extended appearance.
Yes, I'll be back here on Thursday, the 27th, from 6 to 8. And actually, I'm going after this. Some people may be interested in this, if they can tear themselves away from your show. After your show is at 7:15, I think, or 7:15 at Loudon Nelson Community Center. We're having a discussion of the city budget. It's a sort of a workshop on how to read the budget, so people can figure out where the money's hid. And
will it be you or any other council members?
No, I'll be doing it with the finance director, and It's not meant to be a discussion of what we should spend the money on, but simply how do you read this document? How to decode the budget, so you can figure out where the money's hid. If you have different priorities, maybe, than the council for money spending, you at least...
We would never be in that position, Mike.
Might happen. You never know.
7:15, Loudon Nelson Center. Join Mike Rodkin to get a view of the budget, or at least to get his perspective on how to untangle it and make some sense of it.
We're not arguing about the priorities there. This is really just to say, here's what the document looks like. This is what this page looks like. Here's how you understand what these lines mean.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how much is being spent on this and how much is being spent on that, where the money's coming from, and so forth.
You actually were taking issue with a number of the things said in a prior budget, in terms of a budget hearing or a priorities hearing. I guess it was about a week and a half ago when the issue of homelessness came up with other council members. I know it was kind of a tussle between council members Sugar and Crone around the issue of shelter. And I think Sugar was particularly interested in multiple shelters, and there was sort of a difference of opinion between you. I unfortunately was not at that meeting. I don't have a tape of it.
I don't remember it, frankly.
Well, again, I know last night we had a number of interesting disagreements, and hopefully on next Thursday, a week down the road, we can go into those in more detail. I want to also point out that you passed over very briefly yesterday information that you were bringing to the City Council some kind of resolution around the bombing of Yugoslavia.
Yes, on Tuesday, I hope it'll be on the afternoon. That would make sense. I brought a resolution, I will be bringing a resolution to the City Council to oppose the bombing and to basically send that message strongly to our federal representative, Sam Farr, and others at the federal level that we think this is a misuse of our resources. I mean, it was hard to get everything into this resolution and make it fit on, you know, I think it's about 2 pages for how many things are wrong with this bombing and why it needs not to be done.
Is this your initiative mainly, or is it also coming from other council members?
No, at this point I just did this on my own. I assume it will get support from other council members, but to be honest...
I've heard rumors like Sugar favors the bombing or did it one time. Have you had any consultations?
I don't know anything about that, honestly. We'll find out on Tuesday, won't we?
Well, I know that we've had, of course, two occupations of Farr's office with the two sets of arrestees. And we presented Farr with 10 questions, which I gave you a copy of last night. Have you looked over those questions?
Yeah.
Any thoughts about stuff that may be missing or stuff that perhaps is inappropriate or stuff that attracted your attention?
No, I mean, basically, I think you and I on this one tend to agree pretty much down the line. I think the problem... there's a range of different things wrong with this bombing. What I tried to do in the resolution was offer a very, I'll call it a minimalist argument, rather than trying to, like, you know, all the things wrong with it. And you want to try and stick with the logic of city council government. You know, you have to count to four. And my hope is that whereas we may disagree about the causes of the problems in the Balkans, the history of it, who's right about this or right about that.
The bombing isn't working?
The bombing's not, my argument is that the bombing is a waste of our resources. It's not effective. It's not achieving its goals. And it goes beyond that. It's actually illegal. It's not been authorized by Congress. It's clearly an act of war that has not been authorized by our Congress. It's the Constitution.
It's in the Charter.
It's a whole range of different things. It's a big overlap between your list of 10 questions and what's in my resolution.
It's an interesting set of 10 concerns also. I guess it was 8 in the New York Times, which I also kind of pulled out of the paper from the New York Times about 2 weeks old. Okay, well, I've got to get confrontation with you. Why are you introducing this 8 weeks into the bombing? Why not 1 week into the bombing? Have things changed in the last 8 weeks? Or?
Well, you may, I mean, not to be rude in my response, but
please,
it's like,
please,
there's,
please
a lot
free,
of,
yeah.
there's a lot of
this
stuff,
is free radio.
A lot of stuff on my mind, and I have a full-time job at the university, and I work on city issues, and, you know, it's just a question of when you can get to things, and I was trying to figure out around the bombing whether there's some, I mean, not to justify the bombing, but whether there was in fact some sort of policy approach here that made some kind of sense at all, because clearly, I mean, I think the immediate knee-jerk reaction of our government and of many of the members of our public was, you know, something needs to be done. There's obviously bad things happening in Kosovo, and I think that's accurate. But the notion that somehow bombing is the civilians is the solution to this problem misses the point. And it's not as if I, you know, sort of sat here waiting for some particular great moment for it to happen.
What kind of ticked it off for you? What, I mean, was it you just were very busy until a week or so ago, or something in particular struck you, the civilian bombings?
I just think it keeps building. I've been learning more and more about what's going on. I've actually been spending some time reading some of the history in the region, and although that's not the basis for my resolution.
Do you listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz at all on this issue? Because we're doing a lot of stuff.
I heard one program, I don't remember what it was, but I haven't listened to it extensively. But there's been, I mean, I included in the packet for the council members and the public, along with my resolution, an article that sort of lays out the sort of political, moral, and legal issues around this. And it's just on all fronts, the things, clearly not a very good direction for us to be, for our government to be going. I think a lot of people sort of thought, well, we've got to do something. You know, you don't want to sit here and do nothing. There's something, people are dying, people are being kicked out of their homes. There's terrible tragedy happening. We need to respond and do something. And I think there is this kind of an impulse that we have. It's part of the arrogance. And, you know, we all fall into it at some point. I think all of us, maybe even you at times. But,
please.
But, you know, where we sort of think, well, our country ought to fix everything, you know, and we ought to, like, make everything right. And, you know, whereas we would like to be moral and we'd like our government to sort of act on our behalf in a moral way in the world, I don't think the United States should see itself as being the police person or policeman of the world. And I think to some extent I was probably thinking, like, well, what should we be doing? I think I felt, since I don't know what exactly we should be doing, I'm not ready to sort of speak out.
You don't have a solution, but you know what isn't working.
It's not working. So I started thinking about this, actually, the way my opposition to the war in Vietnam came about, because initially, like most of America, I was sort of unaware and uncritical of that war, and it wasn't like I was an active supporter, but kind of passively, well, you know, I guess we have to stop communism somewhere, and back in the early anti-communism that I grew up with in the 50s and the 60s, my first opposition to the war was kind of like, I didn't like the anti-personnel weapons, and I thought napalm was nasty, and I thought, isn't there some way to have this war be fought cleanly, you know, go fight the bad guys.
And see the cluster beams landing in Yish.
And not kill the villagers or something, and I think that was true of most of the anti-war movement, and people slowly sort of went from that, it's nasty, emotionally it doesn't feel right.
What's the feeling on the west side? I mean, the community, not the west side, the community you're in, which is you're not in the beach flats.
No, I live on the west side.
Right, you're on the west side. So is there a change in the last few weeks regarding this, have you noticed, on campus?
I certainly don't speak for the west side of Santa Cruz, but among some of my neighbors, I have an interesting and diverse group of neighbors. Many working class folks live there, some people more middle income. It's a range of different people, and I'm finding more and more that people are sort of asking, like, you know, this is clearly killing people. Is it working? What's the purpose of it? And, you know, whereas you can be disgusted with the right-wingers in Congress who are saying, like, you know, well, we don't want to, like, take a position on voting for it or against it or anything else, and we think maybe we should send ground troops, but in the meantime, we want to find any way we can to attack the president, and they're all over the map on the thing and don't have a consistent politics. I think it's people are saying more and more sort of what I've come to myself, at least as a minimalist position, this is not effective. We are killing people for no good reason, and that's never acceptable. And, you know, if... under only the rarest of circumstances would anybody sort of take the notion that somehow it's okay to kill people, you know, only to stop Nazism in its worst form and to sort of have less violence be the result, and you have sort of all kinds of difficult calculations.
You actually got a copy of this.
This doesn't meet that test. I mean, it doesn't meet the test of trying to really make a decision that, like, you know, how okay, if a bunch of innocent people have to die, at least something good comes out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can make that argument here.
Of course, I agree with you. We've been pushing that very strongly. Almost everybody I've heard, I haven't heard too many pro-war people on the air, and actually I think it would be useful to have a pro-war person in one of these forums so you could have him present his arguments or her arguments.
No, I'll say something that's interesting. This may be something we disagree on. I'm not against people taking direct action or civil disobedience on these issues. People have to make their own moral decisions about what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we really need here politically, I think this is an organizer, is we do need a teach-in, a very broad teach-in, that really does let all points of view be expressed. And I think it would really be helpful, and it was not to sort of have it be, come to this rally in which we're going to oppose this war. I think it would be very, very helpful in the early stages, as it was in the anti-Vietnam War movement, to have a teach-in. Let's hear the people who think this is a great idea come up and defend themselves, defend their position.
Well, maybe you could work on organizing such a thing. I know there's a meeting tonight.
There's a couple of people I know that are working on it, and I've been trying to be in contact with them. And certainly
I know, Celia Scott and others, Jane Reed.
I think it would be very
our meeting tonight at 8 o'clock at the Lauren Wilson Center.
Everything goes on down there.
Yeah, well, just zip. When you finish with the budget, drop in there and offer your resources for that situation. Now let's get back to the vicious infighting here that we were getting into last night.
Fair enough.
I should say a strong difference of opinion.
Let me be clear. I don't think. I hope I wasn't being vicious, and I don't think you were. I think we were having a reasoned, forceful debate.
I'm speaking metaphorically, and I think that I think my position is pretty strong on this issue in the sense that I not only disagree with you intellectually, I characterize your position as I called you. I even spoke of intentional falsehoods before you came in here. But again, it may be that I'm improperly characterizing you. Let me just go through a couple quick things. I know we're going to have a lot of time to go into this, hopefully in the future, and I hope that you can bring in any... Well, let me just take this one by one. Last night, you continued to talk, in spite of my, I thought, brief interruptions, but I thought educational interruptions, about the camping ban. You know that it infuriates some of us to hear you refer to the camping ban. We're talking about the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. You acknowledge that there is a distinction between the entire camping ordinance and the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance.
Well, first of all, certainly there are different sections of the ordinance, and people can make whatever arguments they'd like about removing different parts of it. My own feeling is it's a distinction without a difference, that the issue is, you know, if the goal is to have police officers in the city of Santa Cruz have to make a determination whether a person is really sleeping or whether they're just lying there, I think that's not a very productive...
Let me correct you, because you've said this before.
The police officer would not be called on to make that kind of a distinction if the sleeping provisions were limited, at least not in certain zones. There would simply be no crime of sleeping. There would be other crimes, blocking the sidewalk, littering, trespass, which I feel, by the way, you tend to blur. And we did again last night, you talked about we don't want people sleeping in people's lawns, we don't want people sleeping in front of people's doorways. All these are crimes under different statutes that would still be criminal but have nothing to do with the sleeping ban. Or even the camping, the whole entire camping ordinance, if you want. But you know that for a year we've been working on the sleeping ban, that is to say that specific section of the ordinance which criminalizes sleeping. There are two other sections, one which criminalizes blankets and one which criminalizes encampments, which is actually the real camping ordinance section. Now, are you saying that, I have tended to feel, and I think perhaps others may agree with me, that it's not too popular to be against sleeping because we all have to sleep. But camping, on the other hand, sounds more like, that's jolly, people make those choices, let's go out and roast hot dogs, that's one implication. Another implication is, camping is more long-term, it's more dangerous, deleterious to the environment, bends all over town, for those who are of that particular sentiment, and you don't.
You've never heard me express that, Robert.
You've never used the word bums, except perhaps with respect to some of the protesters, but that's another story. Sleeping is one thing, and camping is another. Sleeping, of course, in a larger camping ordinance is what some authorities have used as an indice for camping, among other things. We have said remove that and talk only about more permanent encampments, particularly when there is no permanent shelter for, as I'm sure you agree, the overwhelming majority of people in Santa Cruz. You agree with that, at least that last segment, that there is no permanent shelter right now for 95% of the homeless people in Santa Cruz tonight, for instance?
I don't know what the percentage is. I know that there are people who are homeless.
But it's a huge number.
Right? Places, and it's not just three people. It's a lot of people.
Could we say a majority? Would that be fair?
I don't really know. As I've said this over and over again, I think anybody that says that they know where the homeless people are in Santa Cruz, how many of them are, temporarily found a place to hang out in somebody's house, how many are sleeping in the woods, how many are sleeping in their cars, how many are sleeping out on the streets, those issues. I don't think anybody
would
say
that. It's that kind of response that makes me worry.
We shouldn't quibble over it. There's lots of people out there who don't have a place to sleep.
Okay. So given that situation.
Well, forgive me if I resist like particular percentages and things, because I don't know what they are, and you don't either.
No, but I mean, we have to make educated guesses.
If I say it's lots, you should accept that as like a basis for us having a rational conversation.
Given that, there are lots of homeless people out there without a legal place to sleep.
Correct.
The issue. And you were purporting this last night, and again, we're not going to have much time to go into this.
I've got about two or three more minutes here.
Let me just say this, and encourage you next week to come back with some more specifics around the magnet theory, which I know that you and even the council members who voted for the continued sleeping ban take issue on. I mean, Catherine Byers and Keith Sugar, and I don't know about Tim Fitzmaurice, but Christopher Crone. The camping ordinance subcommittee or task force seemed to agree that they had found no evidence of a magnet theory. And I would like to get from you, and this is, I disagree with you, and I think you're full of it on this issue, quite frankly, but I would also like to get from any new information you have, any new specific information. This is the same request that Keith Sugar made of you at the March 23rd council meeting. I've been waiting for a month to hear from anybody about the magnet theory in terms of specifics and haven't gotten anything. So, please, bring me your documents.
I think I make good arguments based on the history, based on our own experience here.
We're going to examine these arguments
next week.
In a week, we're going to go through those.
We're going to find
fine-tooth comb. We're going to go through those arguments.
We're going to stop talking over each other.
That's kind of exciting. We both have mics.
I just want to say, I'll give you the last word here, obviously. In fact, you have an hour plus of the last word, but just to say, what I can't do is tell you what the views of other council members are. You're going to have to drag them down here.
Oh, I know that.
And we have different views, about a number of different things. We may agree on some things and disagree on others. I'm not intentionally trying to, play games with anybody about the sleeping-camping distinction. I think you've got yourself in kind of a problem, you and your comrades or supporters there, because you're trying to make a very distinction about some point, and it's hard to make the distinction. Not everybody understands it. I'm not trying to hide the fact I'm against people either camping or sleeping outdoors in Santa Cruz. And so I'm not trying to hide that distinction or trying to pretend like I'm like for sleeping but against camping. That's, you're trying to make the distinction. So don't ask me to try and help you explain to the people what the distinction is.
No, we're talking about the sleeping
bag. I'll do my best to try and call it the sleeping bag, but just as many of your own supporters, David Silva and others, often slip and fall back into calling it the camping
bag. Responsibility for David Silva.
But I'm not trying to make a point with that. I'm just trying to, you know, speak to it, and I'll do my best to call it the sleeping band, but I can't guarantee I won't slip back in.
Because there is a real difference. I know you don't think so, but I think a lot of us do, and that's why we worked on the initiative to that effect, and we regard it as a civil rights issue as distinguished from a social services issue. I know that that's going to be important.
We'll talk about that next week. Anyway, I do need to run. Thank you for inviting me, and I hope people tune in next week. It's from 6 to 8 next week on Thursday.
It is from 6 to 8 on 96.3. We'll be talking to Councilmember Mike Rodkin. Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. We'll take calls at that time, too.
And we will be taking calls. And, of course, you can call in now if you want at 427-3772. Mike won't even be able to answer. I will be able to align him in his absence.
He'll be back. I always look forward to. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that.
Appetite is very great. They eat you in the interest of the state. She is filled with indignation at the thought of education being subsidized and boosted by the rates. It just isn't fair. Nursery schools and swimming classes, leisure centers for the masses, yes, and dustbins and debris the lady hates.
Do you know why?
Because they do. They proved that when they handed me their votes.
So cap the rates.
And cut their throats. Time to bring back flogging in the road.
When Count Dracula is lurking
in the shadows, he's a-working. One by one, his victims fall to tooth and claw. But the ladies had instruction in the use of mass production, and she's such a butt protected by the law.
So be alert
and watch your back. It's when you least suspect you should attack. Don't let her fit you with a cap. Her policies are just a load of crap. So when you hear the vampires yapping with their talk about rate capping, then it's time to load your double bottle gun. When the councils pay a sacking and communities are cracking, then it's time to send them back from where they come. And drive a dart right through the part where there would be a heart if she'd a heart. Now don't delay, do it today.
And that's Free Radio Santa Cruz's rendition, actually, the call on Free Radio. The song about Maggie Thatcher, and Maggie was sort of an earlier version of Tony Blair, and I guess people would find some difference since Blair is from the opposite party, but given his policies supporting bombing, which is one of what I most know him for, I can't see much improvement. In fact, I see more deterioration. Indeed, an interesting story I got off the internet today talks about Yugoslavia. I read it on the air this morning on Tony Treadway's show. Tony has a show from 10 to 1, a lot of science fiction stuff. But he generously let me take a little time to read about stuff off the internet, to read about Yugoslavia, stories from the LA Times, stories from other papers. This was from the Chicago Tribune by a former Nuremberg prosecutor, prosecuted Nazi war criminals, and he had nothing but disgust for the behavior in the U.S., characterizing the behavior as aggressive, in terms of aggressive war, and it reminded him of German pretexts for invading Poland, talking about the oppression of Germans in 1939. We're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or I hope you are anyway, if you're listening, at 96.3, I'm talking to you, you're tuned to it, and we have an open line in case you wish to give a call. Mike Rodkin, council member, is no longer in the studio. The Sleep Buster Rodkin will be back in a week to give us his shtick around why sleeping must be illegal, or perhaps he would report more tepidly how sleeping is not appropriate outdoors in an urban environment. That's going to be a hot show. We're going to have Chris Crown on for part of that hour if he shows. I hope we can also get some a strong woman who can speak to this issue. I'm looking around. If you feel you're going to confront Rotkin on the air, please give me a call either on the air, talk to me on live on air now at 427-3772, or contact me off-air. The off-air number to reach Bathrob Spears Broadsides, that's my show here, twice a week, Thursdays and Sundays, is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is also an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. So 423-HUFF off-air, or 427-3772 on-air, and we can talk turkey, or talk about turkeys, or talk about turkeys who've been on the city council too long, as Mike Rotkin has. He's seems to have been there forever. And again, his position, I think, even though he's in the minority in some cases, is sufficiently pervasive, influential, perniciously influential, that it has infected people like Byers and Fitzmaurice, who should know better. And hopefully they will learn better, but there is no indication that that is happening now. Instead, we have beatings of homeless people because our city council majority, which does not include Rotkin, which is Fitzmaurice, Crone, Sugar, and Byers, bent over and laid down for this latest recriminalization. They actually passed a criminalization of sleeping on March 23rd. It simply reaffirmed the older 1978 law, which makes sleeping between 11 and 8:30 anywhere outside, with some very few exceptions, which don't in any way cover adequately, as you heard even Mike Rotkin say, the homeless population of Santa Cruz, makes sleeping and covering up with blankets criminal behavior. So before you suggest that Clinton start bombing or continue bombing in Kosovo, you might suggest he drop a few big ones on the Santa Cruz City Council's City Hall to go after that center of oppression. Maybe you should bomb their radio service. I hope he doesn't bomb free radio because we let Rotkin on here, I'll tell you. But we have our own homeless and economic cleansing that goes on here. They don't burn people's tents and officially drive them away. They just give them tickets they can't pay, and like Sergeant Clark, tell them to leave town. Get off the mall. Get out of here. Actually, Clark didn't say leave town to Tony Douglas when he was in front of the Cinema 9 3 weeks ago. He told him, I don't want to see you here, because he was panhandling, which is legal behavior. To ask another human being for spare change if you don't do so in an abusive manner is still a right. And it's covered under the First Amendment of the Constitution, in case Sergeant Clark has forgotten and needs a little update on that issue. Here's an article from May 8th. Sunland Tujunga, and I believe that's down in Los Angeles, part of the greater Los Angeles area. And it's a story that kind of has a sort of a deadly familiar ring to some of you. Let me read it to you. Sunland homeless camps face extinction. Perceived fire hazard and complaints from community start movement to relocate those living in encampments, by Claudia Pesciuti. Jurassic Park, so called by the self-described old dinosaurs that live there, and other homeless encampments in the Sunland Tujunga area, may soon become extinct. The fires that help provide warmth and food to those living in shacks or tent camps tucked in among the foothills pose a serious fire hazard to residents, officials say. A rising number of complaints has led to a movement to relocate the homeless people who have come to consider these camps home. Started in early March, the effort consists of local law enforcement and fire department officials and members of several social service organizations in the area. It is coordinated by the Sunland Tujunga Field Office of Los Angeles City Councilman Joel Wachs. The goal is to eliminate the most established homeless encampments in Sunland Tujunga by July 1st, which officials have designated as no more than a tentative deadline. Jurassic Park, which lies in the hills above the foothill 210 freeway, and another encampment near Tujunga Canyon Boulevard, have been identified as the largest, most entrenched camps, with other smaller, less permanent ones scattered throughout the area. Brush Inspector Ken Brondell of the Los Angeles City Fire Department said rampant vegetation makes the foothills a high fire hazard area. When summer comes on, these campfires have the potential of spreading into the wild, he said. But Benny Cole, the homeless man who first came to Jurassic Park 2 years ago, said everyone in the camp is careful in making fires. There has never been a fire out of control, he said, adding that extinguishers and water are kept nearby. Brondell said he does not know of any major fires in the area having been sparked by the campfires, but added that does not mean there haven't been any. Besides the fire hazards, or perceived fire hazards, trespassing allegations may bring an early eviction date to the residents of Jurassic Park because the camp is said to be on private property. Cohen and others said police told them earlier this week they had until Friday to leave the site. Sergeant Bob Kirk of the Los Angeles Police Department Foothill Division said a trespass warrant authorization enabling police to arrest camp residents for trespassing has been issued, but that an immediate sweep is unlikely. In Jurassic Park and beyond, officials have said their main objective is not to kick the homeless out of encampments, but to provide them with resources to relocate. John Horn, a program coordinator for the Los Angeles Family Housing Corporation, said the organization will continue sending a mobile unit which offers medical attention, housing assistance, and other services, not to mention PR cover. Just kidding, that's my addition to this story. Offers medical attention, housing assistance, and other services to Sunland Park twice a month as long as there is a need. Twice a month, thank you very much. That's my addition. Our goal is not to let July 1st come without having spoken to every homeless person in the area. Boy, that sounds like Catherine Beyer and her task force to examine and reinforce the sleeping ban. Before having spoken to every homeless person in the area, he said. However, Horn, like others, does not expect the issue to resolve itself before then. I wouldn't tell people to harbor any illusions that come July 1st. They're not going to have any homeless people in Sunland to Jungle, he said. And while some would like to see the local homeless encampment eradicated, others feel they should be left alone. Sunland resident Amanda Headley, 18, has befriended Coleman and other homeless people in Sunland Park and is angry they may be forced out of their camps. That's their home, she said. It sucks because they're not hurting anyone. Story from May 8th down in the Los Angeles area. And the reason I read it is it really so typifies the kind of bullshit you hear that has been used to relocate homelessly, ethnically, economically cleanse an area, homeless cleansing, an attempt to remove a class of people, not because they have any real stats about fires or, as Palo Alto did when it had its trip and fall stuff about getting a sitting ban in downtown Palo Alto along University Avenue. That law was being justified because there are dangers that people might trip over other people. They couldn't cite one instance where that ever happened. They didn't have any pictures to show that would indicate that it was a risk. But they were, of course, using whatever they could use. Similarly, they have stuff about traffic concerns for people standing at stop signs with or stoplights with "We work for food" signs or "Please give" signs or that sort of thing. The attempt, of course, is to spruce up the environment for the yuppies, and we all knew it. And the question here is, how many rights do you want to strike away from poor people under the illusion that this is not going to have an effect on all of us? Or under the illusion this is a good thing in any general way, or a fair thing? Now, most listeners to the show don't have to think twice about that question. I certainly don't. But it can amuse me and it also galls me, the kinds of pretexts they come up with up in Eureka when they cleared hundreds of people out of the South Spit Jetty area with lies about "we'll have housing for you," with lies about "there's a health hazard." That's what they use, the health hazard thing, the health hazard pretext. But independent observers who even found that didn't exist, still Green Party hacks and bureaucrats up there still supported that approach. And here in Santa Cruz, we find that people are not being given an acre in the Poganiap, for God's sake, to be able to set up a tent at night so they can sleep in a group and fight off trollbusters if they come in some kind of safe area, because environmentalists, allied with people like Mike Rotkin and downtown neighbor groups that are bigots, because they don't want homeless people in their area, they don't want homeless people anywhere in the town to be able to sleep at night. The theory is that they can just do it somewhere else. That sounds like the kind of logic that Milosevic is accused of using with the so-called ethnic Albanian population, something that this country is prepared to kill for, to stop, but not apparently to do anything about locally. Discrimination against poor people. You're attuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. And we got another hour and 10 minutes here to go. We're going to be rolling into some interviews. Hopefully we'll be getting a live person shortly. And until we do, let's hear a little music from Kristen Lamb. Or actually, Kristen Lenz, In the Outdoor.
Right feeling is growing in his heart when he sees his lover's glances. How nice! She finds him quite appealing, but holds herself apart, still prefers not to take chances. He finds her name in poetry, she finds him on TV. They cast themselves as famous lovers back through history. But if both of them were women, or if both of them were men, who would be their famous lovers then? Oh, nice, but starting to go steady. He calls her every day, and they're growing out together.
Kristen Lems, In the Outdoor, How Nice. With us on the line, we have Linda LeMaster of Housing Now in Santa Cruz and also a member of the City's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Robert.
And try and speak up close to the phone. We have
closer,
a kind of a...
The closer? The
closer the better.
Okay.
And the louder the better. I'm much too loud and you're probably much too soft. Let's hear how that sounds. Say something.
Something.
Say something else.
Something else?
Okay, a little louder, a little closer.
Louder, closer, something else.
Very good. So Linda, you're... you had an interesting press conference this morning. You, Bob LaMonica, and activist David Silva came together to propose some kind of an initiative around rent stabilization. What's that all about?
Yes, well, it's very, I think, innocuous request if the people vote for it, and then we're sure we can get enough registered voters, city residents, that it would cause the city to have to create a rent stabilization board. Most of what that means and how it would be defined is left open. But we think it's important, you know, like to get this city council going in some direction, you know, about the housing crisis.
Well, why should it take an initiative, which is going to take you 6 months of signature gathering, and then another 6 month wait, and then a whole election. It seems to me that these new spanking clean city council members, elected in a great surge of reform in last fall, plus Mike Rodkin, who apparently, according to the Sentinel, if we can believe that, they had a pretty big story on your rent stabilization initiative.
Yeah,
proposal.
I thought it was Steve Hartman and everything.
They said he favors this rent stabilization proposal. That's a majority. Why don't you simply go ahead and put it together
Wouldn't
and pass?
Wouldn't that be lovely? I think we will do that. You know, sometimes you have to use the oral communications to get the city's attention. Otherwise, it takes too long.
So is this just a device to kind of increase public awareness, or you actually propose sitting and waiting a year while evictions continue?
I propose that this is my personal proposition,
mm-hmm.
that all of us do any and everything we can think of. You know, if you're lucky enough to be housed, you should be putting back into the community or the one that needs to exist if you don't have one, part of the house, you know, just like people pay taxes to the government to run all these other infrastructures. It's in the interest of all of us that our people be housed and not be hounded outside and treated like some subsidy.
Well, yeah, but you're not housing anybody by running around gathering signatures for something a year down the road that doesn't have any specifics. I don't understand why you don't just sit down with Rodkin, Fitzmaurice, and, I don't know, Sugar, and say, hey, this is what we want to get. This is what we need. You're taking
asked
another.
We've these things before, and they just sort of don't even answer their mail usually. So maybe we can get them.
So, in other words, this is sort of an attempt to get kind of pressure on the council to do just that, to take some action in the next year that is independent of this initiative.
Yeah, I think it's useful instruction, since they are not doing it already, to get the people to show the city what is the popular will, you know, and I don't think we need to wait for the election or any other red tape to have some sign of that, you know. If we say 4,000 people have already asked for this in half the time it usually takes or legally allows to get the signatures, you know, the city thing needs to respond to that actively, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not expecting everybody to have to recreate the whole wheel and every other block or something.
Now, Linda, you're a resident in the Lower Ocean area, or south of Ocean, or I'm not sure.
Some of us south is east side is, but some of us are working under the mantle of this Lower Ocean Street redevelopment zone, or neighbors of Lower Ocean Street.
Now, we were going to be talking to Phil Baer about some concerns that people across the river and the beach flats have, that there's a new plan afoot to remove several hundred Hispanic people from the Dolphin Lee projects, hand the whole thing over to Mercy Charity as, I guess, a big shot in the arm for the Catholic Church and some upscale housing for other people who can afford it. And in essence, do...
Is this going to be for upscale housing?
Well, I suppose they're calling it affordable housing.
That's pretty upscale.
That's what I understood. You have any information on this? I know that we'd hoped to talk to Phil Baer, and we still hope to. He went to a meeting last night, which Tim Fitzmaurice, Councilmember Fitzmaurice, held which according to Becky Johnson, who was also at that meeting, was very tightly controlled and was kind of focused on Sugar's concerns that there is, inadequate housing, tear it down. But no question of whether the residents themselves have any interest in the project, which SCAN, if it didn't officially endorse, certainly gave a high profile to, the Dolphin Lee Mercy Housing Project.
Well,
do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, in general, I endorse the values of Mercy Housing. It's nice to see the daughters of the church doing what the church is supposed to be about, and they're doing it well.
You mean like acquiring real estate for the church?
I don't know about the property and titles, but what I'm saying is
that was liberating. That was acknowledged last night at the meeting by Elizabeth Vogel, that the property would be in the hands of the church at the end of this whole process.
Well, yeah, the Catholic Church could be seen as one big ball of tentacles without much food left, you know, feeding on people's blood, but that's just one point of view.
Well, what is your point of view?
I believe in community, and I think of community as something that's in some degree indigenous. And so people who are creating these neighborhood groups, the neighborhood watch groups, are creating them on the seaside neighborhood now. And, you know, where Hanover House was. And that was in response to a sexual predator stalking.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I'm saying my values are what is more indigenous. Where does people congregate or be a community, you know? Even if you have to sit at the, what is it, the Ewok movie thing, to meet people or to go camping, you know, that spirit is the one other.
Well, what I'm saying is there are some who are extremely skeptical of what the city council is proposing in the Beach Flats. It sounds to them like a revivification, a resuscitation of the old Third Street realignment, Beach Flats plan,
yeah.
Admittedly without the immediate expansion of the boardwalk, but certainly without, say, attempting to eminent domain Canfield's housing or require
yeah.
him to do any kind of improvements, but rather to go for one of these, you know, well, Phil Baer has characterized it as a kind of a failed housing projects like they have in the inner
yeah.
cities like 20 or 30 years ago that don't work. But
well,
what's your view on that?
I think the city should exert eminent domain much more frequently and responsibly.
Say that again?
I think the city should exercise its legal right to eminent domain much more advisedly and responsibly.
You mean that they should
and
do
more?
More often. Now, I know that the city also, under Proposition O, doesn't have some responsibility to build housing that is truly affordable rather than this bogus formula where
yeah,
they pay off the developers.
As far as I can tell, how Measure O is interpreted by the city, not